Blog Talk Radio.
You should be able to hear yourself now.
Hello?
Yes, this is Margaret. How are you?
Hi, Margaret. This is Lisa.
Hey, Lisa. How's it going?
Very well, thank you. Now, is Yvette going to be joining us here as the introduction?
Okay, perfect. And this is going to be, it's like a radio program, is what this?
I believe so.
That's pretty cool, very nice.
Not sure if we're on the air or not, so I'm being a little cautious here.
Yeah, I know.
So I guess we wait for Yvette to join us.
Okay, I'm very excited about it. You know, there's so much confusion about Cuba. I'm glad that you all are doing this to help clarify, you know, what's going on.
It is, to me, it's fascinating, and I know just enough to be dangerous. So.
Good. Good, to make it interesting. Good. I'm in Washington, D.C. It's starting to get chilly, starting to feel like Christmas, so.
What's your temperature out there?
It's about 45, 50. It's not too bad, you know.
Oh, we're supposed to hit a high of 78 today.
Oh, how nice.
You're in sunny.
Especially warm for California, yeah.
Well, you know, we've got a lot of people on fire right now, and that's not a good thing.
That's terrible. I know. It's been very tough, yeah.
Okay, ladies, let me begin by introducing. Hello, everyone. On today's NARB She Call, we will have Lisa Dunn interviewing Marguerite Pulis, President and CEO, U.S. Cuba Chamber of Commerce. Ladies, feel free to begin.
Fabulous. Well, this is Lisa. I am Lisa Dunn with Casabella Realty Group. I'm filling in for Sylvia, I believe, and boy, are those some big shoes to fill. So I'm going to give it my best shot here. This is my first time, so be kind and gentle to me. But I'm so fortunate to have a fabulous person to be interviewing. And Margaret, I hope I don't massacre your name. Margaret Pulis Machado. Did I do okay?
Yes. That's okay. Perfect. Yes.
Wonderful. She is the president and CEO of Vamos Global, a firm dedicated to developing tailored business missions to Cuba. How are you doing this morning?
I'm doing fantastic, and I welcome everyone who's on the call, and thank you so much for interviewing me. I think it's a great topic, and I'm excited to be here.
Fabulous. Well, I was wondering if we could start this off with a little bit about you, if you could give us a little bit of background, how you got into this, your history. Mm-hmm. Go.
Sure. I'll be happy to. I'm Cuban-American. My family came to States before the Cuban Revolution in 59. But, you know, at home, we've always spoken about Cuba and how beautiful it is and the culture and the country and just how rich its history and all of that. So I've always been curious about the homeland of my parents and grandparents and it's always been, you know, something that I've had as a Cuban-American born in Miami Beach, you know. And so my professional life is mostly in public relations. I served in the Bush administration in the 90s at the Department of Transportation and at the EEOC. And I worked very hard, particularly with Hispanic communities, making sure that Hispanics had opportunities for contracting, getting contracts within the agencies and in terms of discrimination, that they're also aware of their rights and the laws and that sort of thing. And then afterwards, I was retained at Burson Marsteller. I was the public affairs director at Burson, one of the largest PR firms in the world. And after that, I joined the Smithsonian. So I had the pleasure of working with museums all over the country, in Mexico, Puerto Rico, and Australia, and helping museums and cultural institutions develop their collections, generate, increase their revenue, and just basically help them be more successful. And then after the Smithsonian, I worked with the Miami Science Museum, helped them get a general obligations bond, helped with the rebranding and repositioning of the museum so the community would support some funding for a new facility. And then I worked at another transportation agency. I'm back in Washington and established my own business, which is public affairs and communications primarily. And when President Obama in 2014 reestablished diplomatic relations with Cuba, I was probably one of the most excited persons on earth. I was finally, this is the opportunity to go to Cuba, to learn about it, to see it firsthand. And I did so. At the time, I was the national vice president for the National Latina Business Women Association. So I said, let's do it under the umbrella of the NLWA. So that we can meet with the private sector, see what's going on with the the nascent businesses that are growing there, and just get a feel for the country. And when I arrived, I guess it was in August of 2015, with a small group of people, I immediately fell in love with the country, and I realized, you know, what my mom would talk to me about, the, you know, how the sky is bluer there and the green is greener, the vegetation and everything else. I said, you know, she wasn't exaggerating. It wasn't because she was reminiscing or any very warm, intelligent, beautiful people. And so that's when I decided to focus on this and really connecting the people from both the U.S. And Cuba, so that people have a firsthand glimpse of what the country is really all about. And I wanted to do it on a business, with a business angle, because I do believe in my heart, and there's a lot of facts to prove it, to back it up, that we will establish normalized relationships with Cuba in the long run, whether it's 5 years or 10 years or maybe 3 years, but I know it's going to happen. So my focus is really introducing businesses to Cuba and the private sector. We'll get into this a little bit later. The private sector can actually do business with the private sector in Cuba now. I mean, there are a lot of things that people just don't know about. And I think that the primary community that can actually benefit from this are the small, medium-sized businesses, you know, that can actually partner with Cuban businesses in the private sector, or really can take up advantage of some of the opportunities there. So that's how I got into all of this. That's my background in a nutshell.
Wow, and you have a very impressive resume, I must say. I was reading a little bit of information on you, and you have just been well-traveled, well-versed.
Not boring.
Definitely not, that's for sure. And, you know, exactly. And what you said about, you know, how everything being so colorful, everything being so much more vibrant. I have friends. Actually, I have a high school friend who's returning from a trip to Cuba today. And her on Instagram and Facebook and watching, you know, where she's going and what she's doing, and everything just looks so alive and sure of people that have traveled there. It's just amazing. So as you can kind of tell, you know, I know just about enough to be dangerous on this, so you're going to be quite a bit on here. Now, you did mention the United States and the Republic of Cuba established diplomatic relations in December of 2014, and for the first time in over a half a century, embassies did reopen, travel to Cuba was eased, and the president visited Cuba for the first time since Calvin Coolidge. We've got a lot going on in this past decade about normalizing or attempting to normalize relations with Cuba. Can you give us an overview of Cuba, what has happened since President Obama reestablished those diplomatic relations in 2014?
Well, first we have to go back to actually when Fidel ceded his power to his brother, when Raul Castro was basically elected president of Cuba. In Cuba, there have been important internal changes that were important to mention, because I think that's what helped trigger the fact that the U.S. Had that rapprochement with Cuba. In 2006, for the first time, and these are things that for us it's almost like impossible to believe, but for the first time, Cubans had access to communication, to internet, cell phones, that sort of thing. They were able to travel abroad. They couldn't do that before. Now they have the ability to own their own property. there is no homelessness in Cuba. You know, everyone is part of the Constitution. Everyone is guaranteed a home and health care and education. So you don't see homelessness. You don't see children in the streets. You know, everybody's got good health care, all that sort of thing. But for the first time, they can actually own one property, and they can actually buy another property, and they can change them if they want to switch and that sort of thing. So that's new for them. They can build things, they can renovate, they can restore property. And for the first time, they were able to establish a private sector, which they called in Spanish cuenta propista. They're like license holders. They're like 250 different licenses that Cubans can apply for. And you see a lot of doctors, engineers, and so forth. They'd rather, you know, be a taxi driver or have a small restaurant or something than having their $30 a month stipend, you know, because it's just, you know, the economic incentive is there, and Cubans are trying to play catch up. You know, they feel like the opportunities have bypassed them. They see other people, you know, other countries growing and traveling, and people having, you know, economic freedoms and that sort of thing. And so what you see with the Cubans and what especially happened when Obama reestablished relations is the look of hope, you know, in their faces, you know, the anxiety to sort of start something, to get something going. And they're always afraid that things may not happen because there have been so many, you know, false starts in the past. But with these reforms in Cuba, the United States reestablished the relations with Cuba. We still have the embargo. But OFAC, the Office of Foreign Assets Control, is lifting restrictions on many of the businesses or the things that you couldn't do before. And so now you're going to see in Cuba, you're going to see that you have cruise ships, American cruise ships traveling there. You're going to see American hotels, the Marriott being, you know, for example. You have Facebook, you've got Google, you have Airbnb. So now you have a lot of companies now that before couldn't get in. And what they've done is they've requested the lifting or the changing of those restrictions at OFAC and Treasury and the Department of Commerce, and are now involved with, you know, and doing business in Cuba. And so what we're trying to do is expand that. We've had agricultural trade with Cuba for many, many years, for over 20 years. You know, we sell soy and chicken and all sorts of things to Cuba. The only restriction that we have is that we can't finance. They have to pay in advance for their shipments. And so that's something that just doesn't make business sense, and it makes it very difficult to open up opportunities, the agricultural opportunities with Cuba. So there's a long way for us to go, but at least, you know, we've made some advancements, and we do see an American presence there, you know, Caterpillar and other companies.
Wow, yeah. Amazing. Well, you know, and that's kind of a basic question, but one that just really needs to be explored a little bit. You know, why is Cuba important to the United States?
Well, first of all, Cuba, it's always been called the key to Latin America. It's 90 miles away from our southernmost point, which is Key West, Florida. It's important for national security reasons. I mean, you know, the military has many collaborations, the Coast Guard, and on trafficking, on national security reasons, all these sorts of things. So in terms of national security, it's important for us to have relationships with Cuba and have, you know, have it as an ally, because the Cuban government and they're the educated population and everything, it's important for them to be, you know, our friend. They're too close. And then the second is the fact that it's an opportunity for trade and tourism. Cuba's always been a magnet for trade, for Latin America, for, you know, it's like a connection to the rest of Latin America and the Caribbean, and it's a great, you know, it's not a huge market. You have over 11 million Cubans in the island, but because of its proximity, because of proximity to Latin America, because of its attraction to Europeans, to everything, it's important for tourism. It's important for selling agricultural products. It's a new market that's has to. It's like the CEO of Caterpillar once said, "It's not a country that has to be developed, it's a country that has to be, you know, like it has to be like everything has to be done from the ground up, you know, whether it's their electrical plants or the infrastructure, all these sorts of things. So that means a lot of jobs, a lot of trade with potentially the United States. And if it's not us, it's going to be the Chinese, it's going to be India, it's going to be, you know, the Italians, it's going to be the Spanish, it's going to be somebody else. So why not, you know, have that natural trade relationships with Cuba, which is only, like I said, 90 miles away.
Yeah, that's pretty close to kind of be ignoring the opportunities there.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. It's interesting that you mentioned everything's, you know, starting from the ground up. And, you know, mm-hmm. based on that, what are the advantages of investing in Cuba right now? And can you give us an example of, you know, U.S. businesses? I know you mentioned Google and Facebook and Caterpillar, but what are some of the other ones that we might be surprised to find out that we're a little bit ahead of the curve and are currently operating in Cuba?
Well, we just got notice, Nestle, they're establishing their factory there to sell biscuits and make, you know, chocolates and all that sort of stuff, and be able to serve the Latin American market, the Cuban national market, and probably the U.S. at some point. So you have a lot of businesses there that are establishing themselves. There are a lot of opportunities in the healthcare sector. The Cuba has a very advanced bioscience, sector with important discoveries. They have a discovery. They have the what's it called? It says a vaccine against lung cancer, cervical cancer. They have another medication that cures, you know, for diabetes, you know, the pain that they get in their feet, that sort of thing, that can prevent gangrene and sorts of things. So they have a lot of advancements in pharmaceuticals.
You wouldn't think that coming out of Cuba.
You wouldn't, but it's one thing when Fidel Castro took over in the 60s, he said, we don't have, you know, we're not a large country, we're not super rich in gold and whatever, but we do have our people. So he emphasized education. He said, our strength is going to be our people and an educated population. And so you have incredibly talented Cubans working in all sorts of fields. And healthcare, biosciences, all these sorts of things are very advanced. And you have these companies from France and others, and Swiss pharmaceutical companies who have already partnered with the Cubans on developing these products and marketing. But the Cubans are very interested in having U.S. because partnerships for the development of these products, for the marketing of these products. Because there's nothing like a U.S. company. I mean, the strength that a U.S. company can bring to the table is not comparable to anything else. So that's just one sector, for example. In construction, we have Caterpillar down there. We have John Deere down there already. We have an Alabama company with the tractor. They're building tractors in Cuba for, you know, smaller farms and that sort of thing. You know, we have the hotels and the tourism sector. We got the Marriott's down there. And energy, I know that they're working in oil exploration. There's collaborations in oil explorations and solar energy and renewables. They're very interested in renewable energies and in transportation. So there are a lot of sectors. I really do see that, you know, the U.S. Chamber of Commerce, for example, they represent pretty much the larger companies, you know, the JetBlues and the Southwest Airlines and the Carnival Cruise Lines and all those. And I think there's a lot of opportunities, especially now, for those that are not at that level. In real estate, for example, at some point, you know, for booking, you know, vacation rentals or the, what do you call those? You know,
timeshares.
Exactly. Those sorts of things. You know, I mean, I'm sure that educating Cubans on real estate, on how things can operate, and establishing those relationships early on are going to be very important. But at some point, real estate, buying condos, their vacation places, that sort of thing, is going to be a big business. You know, or leasing properties for vacation and stuff like that. So there are a lot of opportunities at all levels. And that's why I decided after going to Cuba for over 15 trips, missions, and primarily business missions. We took the mayor of D.C. and Prince George's County executive, and we're now working with the state of Mississippi, who wants us to organize a trip for them, and Georgia, and we have different people who want to take business delegations down there. That's when I decided to establish the U.S.-Cuba Chamber of Commerce, because I feel that there's a niche for businesses like ours that don't have the resources to pay these high-level lobbyists or lawyers, you know, to get the information that basically I have, right? and that can help open the doors to a lot of people. You know, my purpose and the purpose of the chamber and the board of directors that we have is basically to help facilitate that relationship, try to educate people, and serve as a resource to the business community in the U.S.
Wow. I am just blown away. I've got Margaret, you know, these are things that, you know, when I think of Cuba, this is not what I think of. Lung cancer vaccine, this is not what I think of. Great hearing you, since, you know, we're the National Association of Women in Real Estate Business here. It's great to hear about the opportunities that are out there. Oh, my gosh, I would love a timeshare in Cuba. I think that would be awesome. And I can imagine, you know, the opportunities are just crazy there. One thing that we didn't on too much, or what are some of the advantages of investing in Cuba? How does that make good business sense?
Well, a lot of advantages. First of all, number one, the proximity. Number two, I think as a business person, I think that we need to encourage people to export, to expand their current markets. You know, we might be doing okay, or we might be struggling with, you know, with our markets, with you know, getting clients and everything else. Cuba is a totally new market, and it's going to happen. Eventually, the embargo will be lifted. Eventually, we will normalize relationships with Cuba, and things will be much easier. And in that case, it's going to be a tsunami of businesses who are going to try to get in and be part of, you know, Cuba's reality, you know?
Exactly.
The advantage of getting in now is the fact, first of all, that we have the relationships to introduce the people to, you know, the U.S. businesses to the right people in Cuba, and to learn about the market. You know, people who are cultivating their relationships now will certainly have an advantage for those that come in later, right?
Exactly.
And I think the other thing that we don't look at is it depends on what sector you're in. But for example, if you're manufacturing or something like that, if you establish yourself in Cuba, the cost of production is lower. The cost of, you know, just because of the cost of the employees and all these sorts of things is lower. And at the same time, what you have is access to Latin America, where you can sell your products or services to the rest of Latin America, to Mexico, to Costa Rica, to Argentina, to Chile, and to the rest of the Caribbean islands. Because Cuba, when you invest in Cuba, you participate in all the commercial agreements that they have, like CARICOM and all these different trade agreements that they have with other countries in Latin America. So you automatically benefit because of taxes or different incentives or whatever. So depending on what business you're in, number one, getting in the proximity. And it's a market that, like I said, everything has to be redone, you know, from the ground up. So there's huge opportunities. Number three, the growing private sector, the fact that you're going to have talented, educated Cubans that you can partner with to create a business, whether it's landscaping, something as simple landscaping, or having a small restaurant or whatever. They're seeking investors. They're seeking partners. The Americans have the know-how, you know, and it's like the perfect partnership. And then thirdly, the location of Cuba, the fact that you can also serve as a jumping ground for Latin America trade or whatever. So I think there's just many opportunities. And the importance of investing now is the fact that it's best to get in early, know what the market's about, and start planning. Because eventually, like I said, this will happen. And it's better to have your foot in the door than to try to, you know, come in like a Black Friday and everybody rushing through.
Or investing in stocks like right now.
Exactly. Yeah.
It's interesting. You mentioned the private sector, and I found that something you said earlier regarding, you know, the educated doctors wanting to be a driver or open a restaurant because it sounds like it's more lucrative for them. On that, a little bit more, you know, about what's going on in that private sector. What are they looking for? What kind of partners and investments are they looking for there?
Well, you know, when we first went there, we actually met with a group about 30 Cubans that had they were starting their new business, their new businesses, and there were like some were developing computer apps, basically offline, you know, and they were developing like a Google Maps type of, you know, application. Another was creating like an Uber type of business. The other one had like a soap, you know, and a spa products and things like that. Remember, we're the only ones that can't sell to Cuba. I mean, we have certain, like I said, agriculture products, certain exceptions and things like that now. But, you know, when you go to Cuba, you find French perfumes and products and Italian products and things like that, because we're the only ones that have the embargo with Cuba, not the rest of the world. So when you go to a conference or something, you're going to find people from China, from Italy, from Spain, from France, you know, from everywhere, basically, you know. So it's you know, the there's accounting businesses, anything in tourism, again, the restaurants are huge. I mean, what they're looking for are financial investments, partnerships that you can do, that are legal to do. And with the private sector, you don't have the limitations or the complications of working with, you know, with the public sector. So it's easier to do. It's easier to navigate. It's easier to find a partner. You know, like I said, these are educated people with the know-how, the American know-how, and some investment. And I think the investments are fairly modest, you know, compared to anything that would cost here in the States. I think it's, you know, there are a lot of opportunities to explore. And what I'd like to do is I'd rather talk to people and say, okay, what is it that you'd like to do? What's your dream? What is it that you'd love to, you know, establish in Cuba? What is it that you're looking for? And then what we try to do is match you with the right person so you can have those conversations and see where it goes.
Wow, that is great. I mean, just, you know, from the smallest opportunity up to just mind-boggling possibilities.
Yeah.
For people.
Exactly.
That, I think that's great. Now, just out of curiosity, you know, you mentioned like somebody coming up with something like Uber and stuff like that. Is that something that we're seeing coming out of the Cuban people now that they have access to what's going on in the United States and to the internet and seeing?
Oh yeah, absolutely.
Going on out here. I want to do my little thing, you know, here at home.
Sure. Yeah, it's a big influence. Now they have access to information. They're active on Facebook, on LinkedIn. I mean, the fact that they are able to exchange ideas and have you know, connections all over the world. I mean, that's definitely opened up their minds to possibilities and things that they can do. So, and the Cubans, you know, in general, they're just very ambitious, very hardworking people, you know. So they love to work. They're, you know, they have good work ethics and that sort of thing. And like I said, they're desperate to improve their quality of life. You know, they've been going through hell for 60 years. So, you know, they want to see a better future for themselves and for their country and for their children. So they're anxious to make money and make things happen. And when you go to Cuba, a lot of people think, oh, you know, these paladares. Paladares is what you call the private restaurants.
Mm-hmm.
And people probably think, oh, it's probably just, you know, a dining room with a couple of tables or whatever. But these are very sophisticated places. I mean, some are nicer than some of the places I go to here in Washington. And they have amazing, you know, the cooking, the cuisine. You know, it's nothing that you've seen before because, you know, they're it's like to them it's a new palate. It's something new. So you're seeing a lot of creativity in what they're doing. The restaurants are amazing. The country is gorgeous, and the opportunities are so vast, and like I said, at every level, that I think that, you know, and I do believe in my heart, and we see the truth. I think that the more people travel there, the more people see the opportunities, I think the more the private sector is going to understand what Cuba can offer, and the private sector is going to put probably more pressure on Congress, too, to say, you know, let's, you know, why can't I travel to Cuba? I can travel everywhere else in the world, even North Korea, and I can travel to Cuba, one of the safest countries in the world, and do business with Cuba. So I think that it's important for people to visit the island, get a feel for what's going on, and then be, you know, be vocal about it, you know, write your congressman and say, look, you know, this is ridiculous. It's been for 60 years. We've had an embargo that hasn't worked. Let the Americans and the Cubans decide what's best for them. And let's, you know, let's start changing policies so that we can make, you know, a better country for both of us, you know. I think, you know, the more we engage in Cuba, the more things are going to open and improve for the Cuban people. And the more we lock up, you know, then their fate is going to be tied to what it is now, you know.
Well, and on that note, you know, like I had mentioned, you know, I know some people that, you know, currently en route from Cuba right now, and hear different stories of, you know, how difficult it is to get in. You know, you mentioned JetBlue and Southwest. I know that they were talking about having, you know, flights there. You know, if you want to go to Cuba, how do you go about getting there?
Well, one of the changes that the Trump administration issued, and actually it wasn't a change, it was actually when President Obama reestablished diplomatic relations, we were able to travel to Cuba under 12 categories. These are rules set by the U.S., not Cuba. So you have to fall into whether it's people-to-people, education, or research, or whether it's a conference, or it's business. You know, you have 12 classifications. Apply for the visa, and once it's processed, you have to have an itinerary so that it's proof that you're going under one of those classifications. So if it's people to people, it has to be some sort of cultural event, interaction with people, get to know the history, the culture. It's got to be something that proves that it's, you're going under that classification and you're not really going to Varadero, to beach resort, to get some, you know, under a, you know, a hammock or something and drinking margaritas all day or whatever they can eat. So you have to have your itinerary to back up what you're doing. If you're attending a conference, they're going to see a conference. They want to see what your agenda is. So people, when we started having these airlines traveling, before you used to go through charters, primarily charters that left from Miami to Havana. And when JetBlue and all these people started flying to Cuba, people would just book it, get the visa, and just fly down there. And that was really never authorized. It always had to be under the 12 categories and had to have proof of that classification. So one of the changes that Trump said is that they're going to be enforcing the fact that it has to be a group travel, right? And so that's exactly what we do. We've been doing it correctly from day one, you know. We don't want to get anybody in trouble. We've always done that. We develop the itinerary. We secure the visas for you. And we do everything from the airline, from the visa, developing the itinerary. If you're doing business meetings, you want to inquire about business opportunities, we develop those meetings for you. Opportunities to meet with the private sector, with the public sector, with the Chamber of Commerce in Cuba, that sort of thing. We develop that. And and we secure, you know, your ground transportation, your lodging, and all of that. And there are other companies that do the same thing. But we're the ones that focus on business primarily. We're not so much tourism and that sort of thing. That's really not our expertise. We can do it, obviously. And what we try to do is that we combine the business with pleasure, right? So, you know, we have nice itineraries, and everybody who comes back, you know. When we took the mayor's group, there was one guy who was coming down, you know, he looked like a little sad getting on the bus on the way back to the airport. And I said, "Why, did you have a bad something happen?" And he says to me, "No, I'm leaving my heart in Cuba." So that's the kind of experience people have, you know.
Wow, it sounds amazing. Yeah. You know, you mentioned and I'm sitting here saying, how can I scrape all my pennies together and find some sort of investment vehicle so I can go experience myself? But one other thing that you mentioned, too, was the Trump administration and policy changes. You know, how do the recent Trump administration policy changes affect what's going on between our two countries? We were making such great headway.
I know. I know. Well, when he was running for office, he mentioned like on 5 different occasions that he was going to make a better deal with Cuba, but he never said he was going to set anything back, you know. And so when he got elected and to appease, you know, a small minority in South Florida, he played the, you know, the card that he was going to like be really hard on Cuba and all these sorts of things. So the fact that people didn't know what was going to happen, sort of put everything on hold this year until November when they actually issued, you know, the announcement, what the actual revision to any policy was going to be. And so the only thing that he stated, which really does not impact anybody, that doesn't affect you in terms of doing business, is he said that they were going to enforce the group travel. So you can't just fly on your own and head over there. That's number one. And then that's always been the case. But that's what they issued like a major thing, that it has to be under group travel with your itinerary. And then the second thing is that you couldn't deal with any entity that has to do with the military, with the military ministry. And so, you know, they actually listed OFAC, listed a list of 180 establishments that you could not do business with. A lot of these are small hotels, small properties, and they're properties that you wouldn't stay at anyway. So it really doesn't affect anything that we're doing. And I think it's just been a lot of hype. But, you know, Obama's policies pretty much have stayed on course. The matter, like opportunities like this that you're offering me to help clarify in people's mind that, you know, it's business as usual. I mean, things have progressed, not as much as they should or as we wish, especially for the Cuban people. But, you know, the fact that we can still travel there, we can still explore opportunities of business, and we can try to pursue opportunities, even if they have restrictions with OFAC, that we can pursue and solicit that they lift this restriction because we want to do business here and there, and that they're ceding that, they're doing that. And we can see it in the proof of the fact that we have the cruise lines and the airlines, and we have all these industries from the U.S. Having a presence now in Cuba. So the important things remain, and not dealing with the military, that really doesn't affect you at all, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I can understand.
It's important for people to know. I mean, the big changes that they sort of announced and made a big deal about has very little impact on U.S. businesses who are interested in going to Cuba.
Interesting. Now, you know, one thing, looking at some information that you have in a presentation of yours, you know, regarding that are going to be probably gradually happening in 2018. It's mentioned here that President Raul Castro is not seeking re-election once he finishes his 5-year term as president. What the significance does that have for continued relationships? What will it make things easier? Who's going to be in charge?
Well, the person that they envision who's going to replace Raul Castro is Miguel Díaz-Canel. He serves as vice president currently. And the importance of this really is the fact that for the first time since 1959, we're not going to have a Castro in power. And I think that's huge because one of the language that's in the embargo says that we cannot do business while there's a Castro in power. And this is actually going to help us, you know, move forward on that aspect. Now we can actually say, okay, we have no Castro in power. We have different people, you know, different players. And now we can start having those conversations, those discussions, and we want to have on very specific issues. You know, there's some issues that Americans are very keen on. One is getting relief for the properties that were confiscated or nationalized. You know, there are 2 or 3 different areas. They want to maintain Guantanamo. The Cubans don't want Guantanamo anymore. They want to convert that into a park and whatever. They don't want a military base on the island. You know, so those are the issues, some of the issues that they need to talk about. Americans, obviously, they're focused on improving human rights, you know, conditions. and some of the political prisoners, things like that. And I think the Cubans are in such a dire situation now with Venezuela. Now they don't have, you know, the access to oil and just the economic situation in itself. And they are very interested in reestablishing economic relations with the U.S. They know that it's important for them, for their survival and for the future of the country, that I think everything is negotiable. So not having a Castro in power, I think, is going to open up those doors for those very important conversations to take place.
Wow, that's going to be really interesting. So we should
yeah.
keep our eye on what's happening
that's
with
right.
Cuba in
yeah.
2018. And also something that was mentioned here is President Trump is unlikely to reverse Obama's executive order because he'd be getting a lot of pushback from businesses that have already invested in Cuba. And you see, do we look like this is going to continue to stay on course as it is, that we just kind of had some bluff and blunder before just to kind of throw us off course? Or what's your personal take on what you think might come from the Trump?
No, I think it's going to be like that. I mean, I wrote that actually before Trump announced the changes, and it's pretty much what happened. So they haven't made anything that's going to impact businesses. The fact that more airlines are actually Delta now wants to fly to Cuba as well. The cruise ships are completely full. You have more American companies wanting to do business. The agricultural sector here, the U.S.-Cuba Agricultural Council, they're making a lot of push. You know, they're lobbying hard for the financial, you know, to be able to finance the trade and everything with Cuba. You know, it's billions and billions of dollars that would benefit the Gulf states, you know, Mississippi and Alabama and Texas and Arkansas and Georgia and all these states and even Wisconsin. I mean, everybody's really focused, you know, in terms of the agricultural sector. So I think that we're going to continue that drive. I think the private sector in the U.S. is very strong, and they're going to be able to influence Congress in terms of legislation. And now with the changes and, you know, with Raul not in power and things happening there, I think we're going to keep moving forward, you know.
Interesting. Okay.
Yeah.
And, you know, we talked about the different sectors that they're that the Cubans are really excelling at. And we touched on the health sector, which still I'm still blown away by that,
yeah.
in the technology and in agriculture. Is there any other emerging sector that's really not on our radar? I noticed you mentioned something about the Special Economic Development Zone of Mariel. I don't know what that is. Can you?
Well, the zone, the economic development zone, unfortunately, it's one of the things that were impacted with Trump's thing because it's managed by the military. I don't know if Cuba is going to decide to transfer to another entity so it's not affected. So the military removes itself from that. But basically, it provides tax incentives, and it provides a lot of incentives for companies to establish their manufacturing firms and everything there. But overall, in terms of industry, it's anything you can think of. I think that the micro businesses is something that is completely overlooked. I mean, when you travel around Havana, you see all these gorgeous mansions and all that. And then you see, for example, you know, the tree, the landscaping and everything needs. So something as simple as giving a Cuban a loan, let's say $1,000 to buy some equipment or getting him the equipment that he needs, he can set up the you know, a landscaping business, and you can partner, you know, and that can, you know, grow into something important, you know.
You just mentioned, how about all of the she's? I would think that this would just be a huge opportunity for the microeconomic industry that women can do. Is there any barriers?
Absolutely.
Operating business?
No, not with the private sector. There's no barrier between the private sector and the private sector in the U.S. And I think that's what nobody knows about. And I mean, you don't have to ask for permission to do business with the private sector in Cuba.
Wow.
So to me, that's the diamond in the rough. You know, it's working with these micro organizations or, you know, micro businesses or individual entrepreneurs, and just really working with them because they're you know, with know-how and a small investment, they're going to be able to create something, you know, magical, and then those are going to be the seeds of an industry, you know, for the future. Mm-hmm.
Now, do you see anything, any of these micro industries that the Cuban women and possibly women investors in this country could work together to expand? Is there any little niche that they have?
My dream has always been to do a women's business conference. It's just going to different provinces and talking to people and having those conversations, you know. What is it that's needed? You know, do like a survey, a market survey. But, you know, I think that the engagement that we need to do has to be a smart one. You know, it's not just doing a trip and getting to meet people, whatever. You know, I think that doing something now with the backing of the chamber, the U.S. Cuba Chamber, maybe partnering with an organization and then really creating a plan so that, you know, I wrote something the other night thinking about this, and I called it the Pioneros Program, like a pioneer program, you know. And then connecting with people there, finding out what is it that's really needed in the community, what is it the talents that they have, what educational maybe, you know, things that people need, you know, so that we can provide that training or whatever. And then start supporting these nucleus, you know, business, you know,
it's
centers,
really,
you know.
Exciting, yeah. When you think about the opportunities that are out there.
Uh-huh.
You
yeah.
know, it's like just untapped potential. You know, it's kind of like a positive opening of Pandora's box for the
exactly.
And just oh my gosh,
I like
there's
the way you put that.
Uh-huh. There
yeah.
and what women can do, you know,
oof,
to,
so
and,
much.
You know, honestly,
so
I'm so
much.
Excited about this conversation. I know I'd be
yeah.
excited about this conversation, but I think it's just amazing. You've opened my
mm-hmm.
eyes. To what's going on there. And
I think this is a task for the your group, you know, the Metro Association of Women in Real Estate and the U.S. Cuba Chamber. This could be a perfect partnership because you've got talented women, smart women, you know, with resources and intelligence and all that. And with the U.S. Cuba Chamber, to the new chamber that can help open up the doors and serve as that umbrella to connect, you know, the people from Cuba with the women here. I think that can be a huge, huge opportunity.
Oh, I think. And were you instrumental in forging that relationship, the Chamber of Commerce?
Excuse me. I'm sorry, I didn't catch.
Oh, I'm sorry. Were you personally instrumental in arranging that the U.S. and Cuban Chamber of Commerce relationship?
Yes, yes. I founded the chamber in
well,
May of this year.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I founded the U.S. Cuba Chamber of Commerce. So we're new. We have a great board. We have representatives from Mississippi. They're very well politically connected with the appropriations chair in the Senate. You know, with Ed Cochran. I mean, we have very strategic people on our board. It's a small board, but they're strategic. And
wow.
You know, and it's going to grow. Right now it's small, but I mean, we're looking at growing in the right way. And like I said, the reason we established this is because I think that there's a big focus on the big businesses in Cuba, but nobody's thinking about the smaller businesses. And it's exactly what we're talking about now. This is the kind of opportunity for small, medium-sized businesses in the U.S., women-owned businesses, for example, to connect with the private sector in Cuba and assist that private sector, you know, to grow. And that's going to be the future of Cuba.
That is so exciting. You know,
mm-hmm.
I'm amazed by all of this. In fact, it's like, yeah, I want to go on a trade mission.
mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like, somebody like me wanted to go on a trade mission. And your
mm-hmm.
company does tours for people looking for investment opportunities and various other things, correct?
Mm-hmm, correct, yes.
Okay. So what does your firm do that's different from other tour operators?
Well, it's exactly that. We do, we have the resources, the connections, the network, the insight of what's going on in the country.
Mm-hmm.
We have experience. We've been doing this for over 2 years. And we focus, like I said, our expertise is primarily in assisting businesses with entering the Cuban market. And other operations are basically tour operations. They take you to see different areas of the country. It's a gorgeous country. So they have, you know, other types of programs and itineraries. What we do is that we combine both. You know, we obviously want you to get to know and get a feel for the country. So we always incorporate visits to museums, and we go to Old Havana, we go to the marketplaces, and we take excursions to places near Havana, whether it's Varadero or Viñales, where they have all the tobacco plantations. These are UNESCO-designated locations that are just gorgeous. You know, they're just beautiful. So we always include these types of experiences, but these are always complemented with meetings with the, you know, with the Chamber of Commerce of the Republic of Cuba, with the Ministry of Commerce, Foreign Relations, and that sort of thing.
Wow.
And with the private sector, you know.
Interesting. And now I'm going to ask our friends that are helping us put this call together if I'm not sure if we have any way to go for questions while we're online here, but if anybody does have any questions, you can send those to info@nawrb.com. I don't know if you guys out there type really fast, maybe if you have a question,
yeah,
you can get it answered while we're here. But if you have questions afterwards, you can send them there, and we will definitely get those to Margaret. Just out of curiosity, if something that came to my mind is if I was planning on a trip, if I was investing or planning on investing, how much lead time does one need to set up a trip to Cuba?
Well, if we're doing meetings with the government and things like that, we usually like to plan 60 days in advance.
Okay.
So, for example, we'd be planning for a trip in February. And what we would need is a copy of your passport, the page that has the picture.
Mm-hmm.
We would send you the visa application. And, you know, the deposit, usually it's about $500 or so. The trips usually go around $3,500 to $4,000 and includes air in the hotel, ground transportation, food, meals. And I always like to go to nice restaurants, you know, so you get a good feel for the country, you know, and includes, you know, museum visits and tour guides and all of that. And, of course, the business meetings. So we try to keep the rates, the package, you know, feasible so that people can participate. And we definitely make the itinerary tailored to your interest. That's really what differentiates us from everybody else. You know, we work with you. What business do you have? Who is it that you'd like to meet? What is it you'd like to know about? And then we tailor these to each of the people who are traveling, you know, to the delegates.
Wow. Okay. And how long does it take to get a visa?
Well, we take care of that. It takes about a month. More or
less. Good.
Yeah.
Good to hear that you take care of that.
Yeah, we take care of everything. You don't have to worry about anything. We need just your registration, a copy of your passport, and the deposit. And once we receive that, we start working immediately with you and developing your trip.
Wonderful. And is there a way that people can contact you for more information if they're interested?
Sure, absolutely. I can give you my number is 202-492-4849, and you can send me a text with your email, and then I'll write to you, and then we can establish those communication links from there.
Great.
You can also visit the website. It's www.vamosglobalnow.com. So it's V as in Victor, A-M as in Maggie, O-S as in Sam, the word globalnow.com.
Great. Now, I'm not sure, are there any questions out there our engineers for this call have? Guess not. So, we're down to the last few minutes here, Margaret. You have been a delightful, delightful guest. Is there any information you want to give us here in closing?
Well, I just want to thank you, Lisa, for and Sylvia and everyone at the NAWRB for reaching out. I think this is a wonderful opportunity for people to understand what's going on with Cuba And I'm always at your service. So if there's anything you need or your members, I'm here as a resource for any information. And for those listeners, you know, any information that you have, just give me a call, 202-492-4849. I'll be more than happy to speak with you. And I look forward to, you know, maybe taking you down to Cuba. So get to know Cuba, get to know the private sector, and you'll see for yourself.
Well, Margaret, you know, there's some little self-serving questions I had in there, like how much it costs, what's the lead time? I think it's really such a fantastic opportunity, especially for women that want to make a difference in other women's lives and have that is not only something that will personally fulfill you, but also financially give you an opportunity to make an investment that can, you know, technically, you know, kind of change the world. Even if it's a little part of the world, you're still doing something that can really impact other people. Do you concur?
Exactly. I concur completely. And like I said, we would be pioneers, you know, for a country that's a sophisticated, educated, beautiful country that's 90 miles away. But, you know, women in the U.S. could be the ones to make a lot of dreams possible, help the economic situation in Cuba, improve the communities in Cuba, and really be the drivers for the economic incentives that they need, you know, to have a better quality of life for themselves and their children and future generations. So there's an important role for women to play with Cuba. And I hope, you know, we take it on.
You know, I think you've inspired everybody today listening to this information. It's something completely new and different that I have heard, and I'm sure that all of our listeners out here have just been greatly enlightened regarding how things are going in Cuba. And I have to thank you so much for spending your precious time with us here today. And I want to thank everybody for listening and learning with us. And you know what? That's going to wrap this up. So thank you again. Everybody have a wonderful day and a very, very happy holidays to all of you. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Lisa.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.